Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 135. Today, the Amateur Traveler focuses on an interesting story of the youngest thru-hiker ever to hike the Pacific Crest Trail, 2,500 miles from Mexico to Canada. Today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into what I think you'll find an interesting interview, I have a couple news stories for you. Walt Disney World doesn't get as many crowds in September as it does in other times of the year, and they are trying to encourage you to go at that time. So what they're doing, they announced, is that a Disney dining plan will be offered free with certain vacation packages. If you stay at one of Disney's value or moderate category resorts, they'll throw in the food for a five-night stay. That starts about $1,300 for a family of four, so it's not cheap, so you may be glad that they're throwing in the food. Normally, that plan costs about $38 per day per adult, so something I thought you might be interested in. And I told you that happy story so I could tell you this horrific one. This is a story from the Daily Telegraph. Briton Chris Miller was told a flight carrying his partner and children had landed in India because of another passenger had fallen ill, the BBC reported. He also learned that his children had been taken for treatment for chickenpox. But when the other passenger, a 22-year-old male backpacker, died, the staff from Emirates Airline contacted him by mistake and told him, quote, "The undertakers are dealing with the body." So he was told accidentally that his kid was dead. That's the sort of thing you'd think an airline would want to be really careful about the details for. And then moving from the amazingly bad to the amazing, Royal Caribbean has announced a new ship is planned to launch in 2009. The official name of the ship isn't given yet, but the project is called Project Genesis. It's a large ship. That would be a surprise if it weren't. It will carry 5,400 passengers, have 16 decks. The interesting thing about this one is that the interior is going to be a park-like area with green plants, and many of the staterooms will have interior balconies looking over the inside of the ship with this particular area. I have on Tripinator.com a video that is from their site that shows the artist's conception of this. It's an interesting design. Again, I'm not necessarily a big fan of cruising, but this is at least an interesting and innovative design. You might want to check it out. Links to all of these stories can be found at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. Before we started this week's story, I wanted to give you a little explanation and apology. The audio quality is going to be not quite as good as usual because I did have two different speakers on two different extensions, and so sometimes one is breathing while the other one is talking, and I can't edit that out from this end. But I think you'll find this a captivating story. I'd like to welcome to the show Barbara Egbert and her daughter Mary, who are on the phone, as well as Gary, who's in the background, her husband, who've come to talk to us about a trip on the PCT. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
And since in the first version of this recording I tried to say the name of what the PCT is, I'm going to let you do it first time. What is the PCT?
The Pacific Crest Trail.
Okay, which is what?
It runs from the Mexican border in the south to the Canadian border in the north, and it goes through California, Oregon, and Washington successfully. It's 2,650 miles long, and it passes through mostly the crest mountain ranges like the Sierra and the Cascade Mountain Range.
And one of the reasons why we're having them on the show right now is that Mary, in particular, was the youngest person to thru-hike this trail, to hike from the beginning to end all in one season. And Barbara has just written a book about this particular adventure, and the book is called Zero Days, if I have that correctly.
That is correct.
So let's start with the basics. Why is definitely a question I usually ask our guests, but this is quite a big adventure. What was the impetus for this adventure?
Well, we've been backpacking for years, since Mary was an infant, and she was getting about 7 or 8 years old. We were able to do some very long trails, including the Tahoe Rim Trail, which is 165 miles. And we realized that she was capable of doing a really long trail, and Gary and I were certainly interested in it. So we started planning to do one of the major hiking trails in the country. And since we live out here, the Pacific Crest Trail was an obvious choice.
And the name of the book, Zero Days, I heard you speak at the local REI, which is where we invited you on the show, talking about the book. But what does Zero Days mean?
A zero day is a day with zero trail mileage. For backpackers who get into a town or stop at the trail angel and decide to take an extra day off from hiking, a zero day is a very big deal. You get to relax and eat and sleep and get all those wonderful things that are so rare out on the trail.
And the total length of your journey was how long? When did you start and when did you finish?
It was 6 months, and we started on April 8th, and we finished on October 25th.
And that's actually more than 6 months. We took off 3 weeks in June, during which time we flew back east and, among other things, hiked the Maryland section of the Appalachian Trail.
Because the PCT just wasn't enough of a challenge, really.
Right. Well, also because my husband has a tradition of hiking that section of the AT with his friends every year. And he's done it every year since it's been an institution, and we just never stop.
Which has been for 21 years.
How long did you prepare for this? I know that you were hiking from before Mary's birth and didn't really slow down too much, it sounds like, after she was born. But when did you decide we're going to do the PCT and start training for that?
We decided to do the PCT, I would say, when she was 7 and started really seriously training for it. But my husband was in charge of all the real logistical preparations and overseeing our training and everything. So I'm going to let you talk to him for a few minutes.
Okay.
Right. We planned for this for a couple of years, for 1 year pretty intently, for the last year before we started.
And how did you know when you were ready?
We were never sure if we were ready.
Okay.
If you've never done a long trail like this, I'm not sure if you ever know you're ready or not. But we did the Tahoe Rim Trail at a pace that we thought if we could keep up for 6 months, we could do the Pacific Crest Trail. And so that gave us some idea.
And when we talk about pace, what was the pace for the days on the trail, not counting the zero days? How many miles a day were you doing?
Well, if you average it out, not counting the zero days, I think it was probably about almost 17 miles a day.
I don't know if it reflects on your being in charge of the training, but my understanding is you got a nickname.
Yeah, we have trail names.
And what is your trail name and what's the story behind it?
My trail name is Captain Bly. My daughter, Scrambler, gave that to me, and I think she wants to tell you the story. Is that right, Scrambler?
The way he got his trail name was, one day in preparation for our Pacific Crest Trail trail hike, we were packing some boxes to be sent to us along the trail, and my dad was being very bossy and put this there and no, do it that way and so on, and I was like, you know, you're just like Captain Bly. And we all thought that was a good trail name. I, because his crew eventually mutinied him and marooned him out in the sea in a little boat, which I thought at some times might be a good idea, although most of the time I didn't. But we all approved of it because Captain Bly wasn't actually a horrible, evil person in reality, he was a wonderful navigator, and he charted his loyal officers and himself across miles and miles of open sea, which is the kind of thing my dad did. He's a great navigator.
And my understanding is that you needed some navigational skills on this trail.
Definitely. It has a defined route, but it changes a great deal, and a lot of times there's floods, fires, snowfall, and stuff to make it very hard to find.
We start at the beginning of the interview and say, ask people what their highlight was. For each of you, if you could all pick one day that really stands out as a real highlight. Mary, let's start with you. One day.
I'll start with that one while the other two think about it.
Okay.
I don't know.
We were hiking through Oregon,
okay,
and it had been raining almost all the time. And we've been having a lot of problems, in spite of the rain, finding enough water. And we were having a lot of physical aches and pains. And one day we were going through a really dense forest. And we finally got through to a point where we finally had a view. And I looked out to the left from the trail, and there was Mount Hood. It had a fresh batch of snow on it. The sky was blue above with the sun shining, and down the valley there was a fog. It was one of the most beautiful scenes I've ever seen. And the fact that I had two people along to point it out to, it just made it especially wonderful.
All right, we have an actual name for this day. It's called an Olali Day.
Okay.
This is not a day of beauty. It was a day of suffering. It was raining all day, and the high was, I don't even know if it was 40 degrees. We had to go over a pass where it was snowing, and we had to walk through these places where the trail was just covered with water, sometimes running like a stream, other times like little lakes. And we call it an Olali Day because we eventually got to Olali Resort. And that was a miserable day. We'll always remember that.
Now, you did understand that this question was, what was your best day on the trail?
Oh, I thought it was something you remembered.
We were going to get to the other one later, but I think you're just working ahead of us. That's all right. It's not a problem.
I didn't have a single favorite day on the trail, but I did definitely have a favorite section. My favorite section was the John Muir section of the PCT. It goes through the Sierra Nevada in this section. This was absolutely my favorite section because every day we climbed to a pass and had a spectacular view, and then we climbed back down into the valley to make camp for the night. It was one of the most beautiful, wonderful sections along the trail. We had wildflowers and beautiful animals, and that was undoubtedly my favorite section of the trail.
And now the opposite question, and I think Gary already answered this one, so we'll let Gary answer the first question.
My best day on the trail was part of the John Muir section, and it went across Forrester Pass. The day we crossed Forrester Pass, I think, was one of my favorite days. It was very pretty, and it's the highest point on the trail.
How high is that?
Forrester Pass is 13,100 feet high.
And then for Mary and Barbara, their worst day on the trail.
My worst day on the trail. I have a lot of worst days. The worst day, I guess, would be when I realized I would have to drop out. But I think that that was in town. So I'd say my worst day on the trail was in Yosemite. I was having shin splints in my right leg. Gary and Mary had had to take some of my weight. We hiked to Wilma Lake, and the mosquitoes were unreal. And I remember I was just so helpless and overwhelmed. We got the tent, and I crawled inside the tent and lay there and shouted directions to them on how to make supper. And I felt like such a complete idiot because normally I took care of all this stuff, and here I was just incapable, and they had to take over. So that was very demoralizing.
My worst day on the trail was probably near the Canadian border. We'd been hiking all day through difficult snow. We finally reached a point where we were climbing up a dirt road on the side of a mountain. It was very dark by this time, and we still hadn't reached where we wanted to camp because of the deep snow we'd been slogging through all day. We got to the pass we needed to cross to get down into the valley where we were going to camp, and when we crossed the pass, the other side was even worse with snow than the side we'd just been traversing. There was no way we could find the trail. We'd find something we thought looked kind of likely, and then we'd follow it for a ways, it would just wind back and double in on itself, and we realized there was no chance of finding the trail that night. But there was also no campsites around that were remotely possible to put a tent on. So we turned around, and we started going back down the dirt road in search of a campsite. We ended up camping next to an outhouse next to the road for the occasional people who came up it. It was a miserable night. We ended up walking like almost 24 hours, I think. It was our longest day.
Oh my gosh.
27 miles, and it was absolutely miserable.
How close were you to the end at that point?
At that point, I think we were about 40 miles from Canada. Trail miles, not as a crow flies. As a crow flies, it was only probably 10 or 15.
How frustrating.
Now, Barbara, you mentioned briefly there that you weren't able to complete the through hike with Gary and Mary this time because of shin splints, and then also you had a tooth problem, as I recall, too.
Yes, I had an abscessed tooth, and when I came down home to have it checked on, it turned out I needed an emergency root canal. So I had that done while I was home, and also saw my doctor about the shin splints and was told to stay off of them until they healed up so as to avoid stress fractures. I then drove back up to Washington and spent 2 weeks helping Mary and Gary get through Washington while I healed up. And then the last 70 miles we did together.
And when you say helping them get through, I'm not sure that everybody is familiar with Trail Angels, but that's basically what you became at this point. Can you talk a little bit about that role? Because it sounds like when you're doing something like this that it's a solitary activity. So how are you able to help when you're not on the trail?
Well, Trail Angels do a lot of things. In my case, I would have a base of operations. I would be staying with friends or at a motel. And then we would arrange ahead of time that I would meet them where the Pacific Crest Trail crossed a highway, pick them up, take them to a motel, get them fed, do their laundry, and then take them back the next day to continue. Other trail angels open their homes to hikers, and the word spreads along the trail that when you get to a certain point, you can stay with these people, stay in, at their homes or on their yards, use their showers, use their phones and kitchens. Other trail angels provide water caches, mostly in Southern California, but a few places in the north as well. So Trail Angels covers a large number of people, all of whom basically they find that this is an endeavor they want to be a part of. And the way they're a part of it is to help other people complete it.
I was surprised when I saw your picture of one of the water caches down in Southern California when you're hiking through the desert. I can't imagine trying to get through that region and carry the amount of water that you would need. You must be dehydrating quite a lot in that area. Could you do it without Trail Angels? I mean, is it physically possible?
Yeah, it's possible, because the first people that did it didn't have the advantage of having any water caches along the way. I forget what year it was first done, but it was probably 30 years ago or more. The PCTA might know that. They had no access to water caches. Yeah, it's definitely possible to do. But it's hard. Even with the water caches, there were times where we had to go for a couple days or so without any other sources of water. And that was very difficult, carrying all that water.
The other problem I know you ran into earlier on that you were talking about when I heard you speak was you're burning through a lot of calories, and it sounded like you hadn't anticipated just how much food you needed to not start dangerously losing weight.
Right. We were all losing a lot of weight. In the first month or so, I lost, I think, 20 pounds. I'm pretty skinny anyway, and that was a lot to lose. And my daughter's the same way. She's pretty thin, and she lost a lot of weight, too. So we had to start eating more. So we had to carry more food and load up on calories, eat as much calories as we could.
And you talked about the 0 days being one of those days where you catch up a bit on the calorie intake. Anything that stands out in terms of that part of the trip?
We would pick out on 0 days. There was one outstanding one. We were in Oregon, and we got to the Timberline Lodge. And by this point, we were pretty desperate for some food and a soft bed and hot shower. So we decided to stay one night at the Timberline Lodge. We didn't take a 0 day, but we did take about a half day off. So we come down the next morning for the breakfast buffet, which I think was like $12.50 a piece at the time, and paid our tickets. We went in and got plates and sat down to eat. So while we're eating, the people who were there finish, get up and leave, and then another crowd comes in. We basically ate our way through three shifts of diners and definitely got our money's worth. We took a 0 day at Vermilion Valley, definitely took advantage of that, just ate. And then if we were visiting relatives, like one time we got off the trail to stay with my sister in Carson City. And, yeah, people would just look at us and eat everything in sight.
How do you think the experience changed the three of you?
Well, in many ways, all it did was confirm what we already knew. We knew we were strong hikers, we could deal with everything. But it made us aware of just how much we could rely on each other in a pinch. There were times when one of us had to suddenly be the strong one. Each time that happened, one of us was able to step forward and take over in a way that went beyond what most people are really capable of.
We were giving a presentation to my class one day before we left on our trip. Afterwards, some of the students were raising their hands and asking questions, and one boy raised his hand and he said, "What did you do to deserve this, Mary?" as though it were a punishment, and he thought of it as kind of a 6 months long timeout because I didn't have any video games, I didn't have a TV. He thought of it as horrible.
My impression was your reaction was different than his. Did you just jump at the chance as soon as it was decided that this was the plan, or who was the hardest to talk into this?
We all say it was my mom's idea.
Okay.
Usually she's perfectly willing to accept that responsibility. I thought it was a good idea from the start. I thought it would be fun. I thought it would be wonderful, but my dad was actually the hardest one to convince of it.
I was the most reluctant one.
Yeah, he was kind of difficult to convince, but eventually we did convince him, and I think we're all happy we made that decision.
And then what did you do? You were in school when the trip started, and then the rest of your classmates were in school before you got back. How did you handle the fact that you were out of school for a while?
I started the trail during my fifth grade year. I came back during my sixth grade year. For my fifth grade schoolwork, I started the schoolwork for that year during the summer before. So by the time I was ready to leave, I'd pretty much finished my schoolwork for that year. When I came back to sixth grade, I stayed home for a week and read through quickly the parts of the textbook that my class had already covered. When I went back, I was ready to just jump into my schoolwork again.
Who is the most memorable person you guys met along the way?
Good or bad?
Either way, memorable.
One of the ones that comes to mind right away is this guy we call the Pigtailed Prophet of Doom.
The Pigtailed Prophet of Doom?
The Pigtailed Prophet of Doom.
Because you see, he had pigtails.
I got that part.
We can always get a laugh going if I say, "Look out, the snow level's falling to 3,000 feet. Run for your lives.
We're all going to die."
Because this guy, we were heading up into these mountains up north. He was running down the trail, his pigtails flopping, thinking he was going to save his life or something. It got pretty bad. In fact, the next day was at a lolly day, but I don't think he was in any danger. His car was about a mile away.
Yeah, he told us on his way down, he said, "You guys better turn back. I talked to a guy up there with a weather radio, and he told me the snow level is dropping. It's going to come down, and it's just going to snow buckets." He literally ran off down the trail, his pigtails flying out behind him.
That sounds memorable. Biggest surprise?
The biggest surprise was finishing. By the time we got up near Canada, it was late October, and the weather was really rotten. And the second time we tried to get over the pass around Slate Peak, the wind was so high it knocked Mary flat on her back.
Oh, my.
And so we got a ride back down to Mazama with a hunter, and I said, this is it. I'm calling it off. We're not going to end. Because I didn't see it was possible. A blizzard was expected, and it was just awful. So I said, well, this is it. But Gary said, don't be so hasty, and Mary says, I want to finish. So we went into the town. We took a 0 day, went to the Forest Service, looked at all their maps. Folks we were staying with called up a forest ranger that knew all the backcountry routes. Among them, they were able to work out a route that took us a little bit east of the crest to where we wouldn't be in such deep snow and where we might not get hit by the storms so bad. And sure enough, we hit a window between storms that just gave us enough time to punch through to Canada. But I really thought at one point that was it. We were within 40 miles and just would never finish. So the biggest surprise was when we crossed the border.
What do you wish you'd known before you started out?
I wish I'd known that my feet would get wider and that I should have started wearing men's boots from the get-go instead of waiting until Northern California.
Favorite piece of equipment?
For me, the favorite piece of equipment was our little backpacker stove.
Mm-hmm.
The pocket rocket. The thing's wonderful. It's so easy to use. It's so reliable. Weighs hardly anything. And except for a few nights when it was just too windy for anything to light, I was able to just cook up that dinner in no time flat.
Most useless piece of equipment you took?
Most useless piece of equipment? Trust me, we did not carry any useless equipment.
Okay.
Gary, your turn.
Well, we didn't use our ice axes much, but if we would have had to use them, we would have been glad to have them.
Okay.
My favorite piece of equipment was not really equipment, but seeing as I was only 10 years old, I carried a little stuffed animal with me, a stuffed porcupine, in fact, named Cactus, for obvious reasons. I could think about Cactus riding in my pack and seeing all the sights. That was fun for me, and it really heightened my spirits a bit.
And speaking of raising your spirits or keeping up the morale on the trail, favorite way to pass the time on the trail?
Well, I like to talk. My favorite way to pass the time on the trail was to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk all day if I was allowed to, and mostly about things along the trail, but sometimes just about nonsense things. Remember, I was only 10 years old. But this was not the favorite way to pass the time for my dad. My mom was willing to talk with me almost as much as I wanted to talk, but my dad is more the silent type of person. He would get real tired of me constantly just prattling on, and he would tend to walk about 50 yards ahead or behind of us so he wouldn't have to listen to my unnecessary chatter.
I like to look at the scenery a little more.
Okay.
Really the scenery, just soaking it all in.
Mm-hmm. As we start to wind this down, are there any either warnings that you would give or advice you would give to anybody who's looking at repeating this sort of trip?
Yeah. One thing I learned on the trail was that there are different measures of success. And to my mind, two of the most successful people I met in 2004 were Scott Williamson and Yogi. Scott was the first person to do a successful yo-yo hike on a PCT, which means start at Mexico, hike to Canada, and return to Mexico all in one calendar year.
Wow.
Yogi is a thru-hiker who has such a great memory for the trail that she's written trail guides about the Pacific Crest Trail and the Continental Divide Trail that hundreds of people rely on to help them finish. So these two people reshaped my conception of success. I realize they are towering figures in the trail community, and I have endless respect for both of them.
Here's a warning. I don't think people should start into a big hike like this all of a sudden, and I especially don't think people should take on something like this without being ready for it. And they should not assume that because a family did this that any person could do it, even some real fit person, because there's a big psychological element to this of getting up every day and putting in those miles. It's pretty difficult. It's challenging mentally, and not everybody can do that. And there is also occasional dangers. You've got to be ready for those.
And Mary, we'll let you have the last word. Any advice or warnings you'd give to somebody who's going to do the same thing?
Not not to sound too cliched, but my advice for someone on the trail is it's not all physical. In fact, it's really mostly mental. From the beginning, I never really doubted that I was going to finish and I was going to do it and succeed. If you go through it thinking, this might be the day that I'll have some kind of debilitating disease or get bitten by a snake or fall down a gorge and die, it's not going to be a very successful hike. Think positive, and that might sound kind of cliched, but think about the dangers, plan for the bad points, but think about the positive aspects of the trail, and keep your goal in your mind. Think about the end, and also, kids, don't try this at home. Practice first.
That seems like sound advice. And clearly, with that attitude, you'll be going on to greater success in other areas. I thank you all for coming on the show. And the book, again, is 0 Days by Barbara Egbert. And thank you also, Mary and Gary, for being on the show.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Well, I have enough time in this particular episode to give you the internet resource that I haven't given you in the last couple weeks. Unfortunately, I've got a bit of a technical difficulty. My microphone that I've been using this whole time, for the last 200 episodes for this show and my other podcasts, seems to be dying, and the replacement microphone, which showed up yesterday, is missing a key part. So I'm not sure how much time I'm going to have to record here. So I'm just going to give you one thing, which is in the news from the community. I did have an interview this week with Callie Lewis from Geek Brief TV for a new show that she is doing called On Location, where she'll be interviewing both podcasters and bloggers. I happen to be in Dallas on business, which is where Callie and Neil are. And so that was a pleasure, and I'll put a link in the show notes to where that video interview is. It's about an hour-long interview, talks about the show as well as my day job and lots of other different things. So I hope you enjoy that, and we'll bring this episode to a close. If you have any questions, send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment at amateurtraveler.com on the show notes. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/chris2x, and the number for the comment line is 917-720-2583. And remember, if you go to amateurtraveler.com/contact and click a button, the comment line will call you instead, and you will have only a local call. So with that, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cave.